All right, what is up, guys? This is Fred Castro and Sean Wilbanks bringing you the Stand For It podcast. Two real guys talking about real shit. The good, the bad, and the ugly. And just like us, I'm sure you're wondering, what the hell is really going on in our society?
Let's get one thing straight. This is not about left versus right, black versus white, gay versus straight. It's about doing what is right. Our goal with the Stand For It podcast is to abolish the divide. It's about being free men and women that stand for our countries and create change one person at a time, starting with you. It's time to lead or be led. What's up, Fred?
Very nice.
Thank you.
All right, that's the first one.
Huh? It's only taken a year.
It's the first one you've nailed in the last 3 weeks, but congratulations.
Where's the love, man?
I stumbled on this one because my internet froze up, so you guys got a nice picture of me looking special.
You got that Walmart internet in California.
That's what I'm talking about.
Did you pay your internet bill?
For a premium price, yes. California prices. So,
what's up, man? How you been?
I've been pinned, pedal to the metal. So I'm trying to switch gears here. Had a busy day and busy week, busy month. But switching gears, get into podcast mode, get excited about this. So, but everything else is good. How about you?
I'm good, man. It's Friday. Every day is Friday in my world. And happy to be alive. Girls are good. They're in spring break mode right now. So they're finishing this is their first week of spring break, and they got next week off, and then they'll be back at it. So working hard and playing lots with my girls. Went to a spring training game yesterday, and everything's good. No complaints.
That's good. Spring training in Phoenix, that's a busy time of year.
It was beautiful. Got to see the Cubs and the A's, and it was a fun game. So, but I'm excited, man. We got a good guest, Mr. Brad Abbott. He's actually a buddy of mine, and he's a creative finance specialist, or a lifestyle investor specialist. So basically, what does that mean? We'll let Brad tell you, but he takes care of my stuff, and he's an overall good dude, and I'm honored to have him, and glad he's here with us. Brad, what's up, man?
Just a father lifestyle, you know, working out of the office home today, and I'm trying to stay alive, stay above water, you know, wait for the mom to get home.
You're in beautiful, sunny Florida, aren't you?
Yes, sir. I'm in the what are they called, Sunshine State, or is that California?
I don't know, but it is sunny there.
I don't think we need to go any further. You pretty much took all my thunder just introducing you there. So
yeah. You're not originally from Florida. You've moved like three times, haven't you, in the last, I don't know, 5-7 years?
No, not that many. I would say I'm originally from Colorado. So lived most of my life in Colorado, but moved several times within the state. But then me and the family decided to pick up and kind of just, you know, move to Florida, do something different after the, you know, 2019, 2020 COVID crisis or pandemic.
Yeah, that's exactly, you know, hit it on the head.
Yeah. Just took off down this way, and it was kind of an interesting story how we ended up down here. But we really just sold our house down there. We, you know, market was great, market was high, and schools are going crazy. Of course, they wanted to do the vaccines, all the things for the kids, and we pretty much were like, "Yep, we're just going to sell," and hopefully we're able to find a place in either Texas or Florida. And we were leaning more towards Texas at the time, and looking at schools. Searching on, my wife's more of a school nut. We don't like public schools a whole lot, just because, you know,
understandably so.
The education is important to how our kids learn, but more necessarily like the sports athletic side of things. Like, where's the best quality of both that they're not going to push an agenda, essentially. So,
that was your main driving point, or whatever, is getting out of Colorado and going somewhere, either Texas or Florida.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's time for a change. We've been there our whole lives. We're like, you know, we're not going to do this anymore. We're not going to put up with it. So they're not going to solve it
for
us.
Crazy.
Fix our own problem and take care of ourselves.
Well, I can commend that for sure. That's definitely a Stand For It principle. So congratulations on making the move and making it worthwhile. I think we got Sean locked up here.
He may have froze a little bit there.
No, he's having a seizure. Hopefully he pops back in here, or we're gonna have to kick this thing into gear one more time.
Yeah, that's all good. But yeah, no, we took a stand for it, essentially, you know. So
yeah, I was gonna say, what part of Colorado did you come from?
Northeastern Colorado. It's more the okay. Denver metro area, but it was out of the city limits, kind of the rural area.
Okay.
Yeah. But lost him.
Yeah, he's probably logging back in. We'll just hang on a second. Yeah, it's a shame that how many families that we run across that, you know, they were faced with the same challenges and decided to make a move for the better. You know, I mean, that's really what you got to do is take it into your own hands.
Yeah, it was unfortunate. You know, it's kind of forced. My hand was forced at that point in time. So,
well, I think you made the right move, right? You want to be in control of your narrative for your family, not someone else's.
Right.
Sean, welcome back.
Pop back on there.
Oh, we don't even know if this is real time yet.
Yeah, we don't.
Still, I literally had a power surge. My computer shut down. All the lights went off. And I was like, what just happened? I was talking and the screen went black. So I'm sorry. Did I miss anything good?
The best part of the show, Sean.
Dude. Yeah.
It got so good.
Well, I'm glad I'm back. Sorry I missed it, but I'm sure I'll catch up.
I'll just catch you up real quick. We were just talking about, you know, the move from Colorado to Florida, you know, under the circumstances, you know, and him taking, you know, the well-being of his family into his own hands and making sure that, you know, he's raising his kids his way. Mm-hmm. So we were just touching on that. And then you magically popped back in.
Well, and so that's good.
Here we are.
I knew that about Brad because I do know Brad from years past. So I'm glad you got to catch up to the real story of Brad Abbott. So.
Yeah, we didn't go that far. Come on, we're waiting for the juicy details.
Why do you think Brad and I are friends? And he takes care of my money.
He's
a good dude, and you know, that's why I think one of the many reasons, but I think one of the main reasons that Brad and I connect so well is because of his stance and the importance for his family, right? We talk about the four pillars all the time, the core four, and Brad embodies that in his lifestyle. It is his faith, it is his family, it is his fitness, and it is about finances. And you know, we talk about all the time here, who's in your tribe? And who's in your circle? And Brad's one of the guys that's in my circle specifically for those reasons. So, yeah, man, I'm glad we got to get that out and established. But yeah, so go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, how old are you, Brad? Just out of curiosity.
How old do I look?
You're pretty swole. We'll just put that on the table now. This guy's ripped.
I do dedicate a lot of time to staying healthy, but no, I'm almost 40, so I'm 37.
So, and I would say, you know, one of the things that we, I know Sean and I had battled with over the years, and we'll have different guests on the show, is just finding where you decide to take charge of your own life, find your own alignment, and live within, you know, what's good for you versus what you think is you're supposed to be doing. So, I mean, obviously you're fit, you look pretty young, you know, I should have taken me over 40 years just to figure kind of what I wanted. And get in alignment, start building your tribe with people that are like-minded, and not letting somebody push you around or kind of guide your family into a direction that's not suitable for the life you want to live and the outcome you're looking for. So I commend you on that, for making that bold move from Colorado to Florida, you know, and keeping what's most valuable and most important to people like us is your family, anything that resides inside those four walls of your home.
Yeah. 100%.
Congratulations.
What was life like growing up, Brad? You were from Colorado, and so peel back some layers of Brad for our listeners. And
so we're holding the onion right now, so we just chop this thing in half. We'll just get
just make sure you chop it in half the right way so we don't cry.
you're gonna get me emotional just thinking about it. So I was raised very, very poverty. So most people who think like, oh, I was raised in a middle class family, I was below. What middle class and low class, like I lived in a single wide trailer house. I grew up on like a little ranch with you name it, animals, gardens. So we lived very, you know, minimal to say the least. But you know, growing up, we didn't know we were poor. We had no idea what that even meant, what that looked like. All we know is we had, you know, we had some four wheels and dirt bikes, we had farm animals, and we had a roof over our head And when it hailed and rained and had tornadoes, we had to run to a cellar like 50 yards away. So we knew we had a cellar. We had food on the table. We had a roof over our head. So, but we'd go to our other friend's house and we'd see the actual houses and be like, oh, this is what, that was middle class. We thought that was great.
Right.
But then we would come back to our home. We're in a single white trailer house, you know? So very on the far poverty end, I would say. Dad was prior military, you know, served in the service. Very rough dude. You know, he's a lot bigger than me in my size. He was 6'4", 260, you know, built like a brick, you know, crap house, basically, as most people would say.
You can say shit house on here. You're allowed to.
Yeah. There might be kids listening. No, but so just very black and white type man, strict, you know, tell you once, you listen twice, you're getting something thrown at you, or you're getting smacked. So very strict household, to say the least, but built on maybe not the best values, you know, at the time, you know, but character wise, he taught us a lot about respecting, you know, women, working hard for things that really mattered in life and, you know, getting what was yours, earning your keep essentially. We'd wake up 4:30 in the morning. If we weren't up, he'd flip the beds over on us. We'd get, you know, we'd walk down the hill 45 yards to feed them, water the cattle, the horses, whatever, chicken, poultry, you name it. We had to take care of it in the morning. And in the winter, we had to drag the hose down there, buckets of water, break the ice. So the whole nine yards. So very, you know, labor type upbringing, which built a lot of good character. But that's essentially how I was raised, when that kind of that mentality, that mindset, if you have to work up sun up to sun down and put in the time to do it. That's what, you know, where it comes
from. Your work ethic definitely is not in question, because having a father like that and an upbringing like that, you either worked and had stuff. And as you said, you were poverty, but you didn't know you were poor, right? Until you went over to your friend's house. But your work ethic is not in question. So high school, you go into high school, and then Brett, now for our listeners, Brad's a big dude. Like Fred said, he's 6'7" and he walks around, what, about 240?
Yeah, 240, 245. Yeah,
he's a big dude and he's jacked. But he's
my 240 is not the same as his, or my 260.
Yeah. Mine stretched out.
Fred's is like a keg of beer. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a keg of beer. So, but I'm supposed to be 7 foot tall. So yeah, that makes a difference.
You got the pony keg. It's a
story. But I'm a good time.
You go to, you're playing sports. You're obviously a basketball player. What kind of athlete were you, or student were you in school? Did you get good grades? Like, was your dad that, you talked about character, was your dad that popping the whip, like education, academics plays a vital role? Or were you going to just be a blue collar guy and go into the military like your dad, you know?
Opposite. He didn't like the military. He said, if you have the chance, shoot yourself in the foot, stay far away from it. He didn't trust the country. He kind of saw how manipulative the country was, what they did, how they used, he just didn't like the system at all, didn't believe in it. So he said, don't ever go. If you don't have to go, don't go. It's not right. Worth it.
Oh, wow.
But he was actually the opposite. And then for school, he said, school's not worth it. Don't go to school. Go out there, earn your keep. You can make more money working for yourself than you'll ever get out of a degree, out of a trades. So he was very against any kind of schooling. When I was, you know, being told to school, like, go to school, get good grades and get a good job, and someday you might be able to retire. Right. And that was the American dream that a lot of people put out there. So it wasn't quite raised that way. His mindset was totally different. You go out there, and if you want to make money, you have to work for it, trade time for money.
Right.
Yeah.
So it takes you into college. And now when you went to, what college did you go to play basketball?
Several. So first, out of high school, I got several offers to go play, but I came from a very small school, like out in the middle of the country school, where I was the tallest across probably six districts. And there was one other guy.
Five counties.
Yeah, whatever. Work country community, right? Playing basketball, all these small schools at the 1A level. So for me to even go anywhere was kind of unheard of. There had been a few guys who'd kind of went from smaller schools in the areas to play, you know, football, went pro to some extent, but no one really made it out as far.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of offers. So Euro League, Australian League. So those, back in the day, they were both different leagues, you know, wise. Sure. So getting over there was a pain. So played at semi-pro level, and then Division II, so D2 level, and then a lot of JUCO ball, travel league, and travel league was the craziest. I met more pros playing in the travel league than I ever did playing at, you know, the college level.
Sure.
But JUCO, that's actually where I actually met Carmelo Anthony and his friends from, you know, the hood, essentially. So I explained it. I met him at a small little town out in Podunk nowhere and ran into Carmelo Anthony out there. So that was one of the craziest stories, actually. But anyway, that's kind of where I went. And that was just more of an escalation of series of meeting the right people, but never really making it far enough. Ended up having a few knee injuries that kind of took me out indefinitely. It was either that or go get multiple surgeries and then maybe have a chance of going pro, going to the NBA. And that's what travel league was. It was like my last shot of being like, someone look at me. Maybe I go over to Europe, something. And it just didn't pan out that way.
So what are you thinking during this time when you're in college and you're playing sports? Like, where's your mind at? Are you thinking, okay, I want to be an entrepreneur. I'm going to get a degree and I'm going to go get this 9-to-5 job. And like you said, trade time for money. Right. I'm trying to get an idea of when did the switch flip for you to become this entrepreneur and say, you know, I'm going to go out and get mine, or I'm going to just work for somebody.
Right. Well, after that, I kind of went into the oil and gas industry. I came back and, you know, got a job just delivering, you know, fridges, containers, you know, all the stuff that people have in their house or outside farm equipment. So that's where I got, you know, got into weightlifting, got pretty buff, you know, carrying fridges and washing machines by yourself is not an easy chore. So, like, hey, you're big, just carry that thing. Okay, great.
Right.
The transition was more so after that. You know, realizing I had to be in the oil and gas industry, I had to go work for a living, do blue collar, that college wasn't going to work out, education wasn't working out, that I was just going to trade time for money and figure it out. So I kind of fell back into that, you know, like, well, I can make better money in the oil and gas industry. You know, cleared $250 a year making, or in the oil and gas. Great living, you know, and did that for quite a few years. But in the midst of that, I got into MLM network marketing. A friend shared an idea with me. Like most MLMs go, they share an idea. Here, watch this video. And it was a travel club. So I'm running a travel club, building that business out over 4 years to probably 500 reps in organization. Wasn't making the money of someone who should have been at that level.
Right.
But that really, that transition right there, I saw a way out into the entrepreneur space, the owning your own business. I saw an opportunity to get out of the oil and gas industry and stop working 14-hour days. And really create my own freedom. So that's where that kind of started.
So there actually is a silver lining if you join an MLM. Maybe not for most people, but that was the silver lining where you're like, hey, this is my chance to be an entrepreneur. You know?
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy to think what life would be like. We talk about this all the time, Fred, where we're talking about seasons. You know, we're always talking about seasons and or paths or roads that we go down. Or that we're led down to, and it's amazing how the path can veer off to the right, left, or go center, and that one decision or that one choice you make can literally alter your life for the rest of your life, for good or for bad, you know. And that choice to go down an MLM, my dad used to call it multi-devil marketing, and not multi-level, multi-devil. And so,
well, it's good depending where you're at in the pyramid, right?
Right,
but you know, but I think one of the people always make fun of them, and, you know, and I know people that have made, you know, a healthy living doing that.
Millions, yeah.
But at the same time, you know, worst case scenario, you're going to get a lesson. You're going to get some education out of, you know, having to take responsibility, because you're only successful if you do the work, such as most things in life, right?
Right.
Yeah. And so you do the work and you get the rewards. But, you know, unfortunately, in multi-level marketing, you can do some work. But I think it pans out from anybody that's truly going to do the work. It's probably harder if you're lower in the triangle. But if you're closer to the top, you're going to benefit more rewards. But you got to stick to it. It's not an overnight success, which people want and expect. Yeah. But
well, and that's, I think that's one of the things that we talk about a lot, Fred, is so many people, I know I did when I was in college, I had these ideas of grandeur of being this entrepreneur and I'm going to make it and I'm going to make millions and I'm going to do it this, I'm going to do it in this time frame, and I'm going to cut the years off and I'm going to blow people's mind. And here I am 50 and we're just getting the ball rolling. You know what I mean? And it's like, yeah, you've got to put the reps in, and you literally just have to eyes straight ahead. Like Deion Sanders was talking yesterday with Ed Milet when I was listening, eyes straight ahead, ears straight ahead, nose straight ahead, and your focus is straight ahead, and you just keep going.
And he mentioned too that even your member, when it's excited, points straight ahead.
Yeah, when it's erect, it goes straight ahead. Yeah. But I think that, you know, that it's something that's overlooked for so many people. I know for myself is it's going to take a hell of a lot longer than you think, and it's going to be a hell of a lot harder than you can imagine. And it's go, right? It's just go. So, man, that's good. You're in the oil and gas, and then what next, Brad? What I know you got some big things coming, you know, down the pipe after this oil and gas, but
yeah,
where did you go after that?
No, it was kind of a back and forth between, you know, the oil and gas industry for a while and trying to figure out how to make, you know, get out of an industry where you work so hard but made such good money. And you know how it is, like, again, it's hard. You know, transitioning, you go making 25, 35, 40 grand a year doing an MLM, you know, and then you're trying to replace a $250,000 income.
Right.
It's not always the easiest thing to do. And they talk about financial freedom. At some point you find there's a breaking point, whether it's in life, you know, through its business or working a 9-to-5 job, or if you're a trust fund baby, something's eventually going to fall in your lap where you choose to make a decision, a choice where you have to find your own way. Or live through someone else's, right? Live in the garden, or you go build your garden.
That's good.
And I think a lot of people forget about the work that goes into doing that. Dirt, the soil, the timing, you know, reap your harvest, plant the seeds, but reap the harvest. And I think a lot of people forget about that timing along in that transition. So it took some time. Right? I'm a, you know, 15-year overnight success. That's what I tell people. Like, it seems like it goes great now, and I really don't even post that much about what I do now, just because I'm referred out. I don't need to, and I work on a pro bono basis most of the time.
Right.
But still, it took me a lot of time to learn to be around the right people, to have the right mindset. And it, you know, you kind of have to fail your way to the top. And Ed Milet talks about this a lot, and I love Ed Milet, and so many people listen to and have the knowledge of what that guy spits out is just insane. But it comes out so easy that it's so obtainable, but you're right. You have to do the reps. And if you can't get through the reps, like, then you got to have unbelievable faith that you're going to continue doing those over an extended period of time.
Sure.
So no matter what you do, it's got to fall back on faith. You're going to come to a point in your life where faith, you're going to be hit rock bottom. There's nothing else for you to believe in, but to have the faith to pick up and go again of what, you know, whatever God's destiny has in plan for you or his provision for you. So it's his will, you know, for your path, your journey.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. When did you get serious about your faith? I know that you're a man of faith, and every direction that Brad goes, I know that you pray and you seek counsel from God. And I know that's paramount. That's one of your core four pillars is your faith. When did that transition? When did that really kind of begin to take hold in your life?
I'll be real and transparent to you, because I wasn't the best. Even though I was raised with a very strict father, my father wasn't a great role model when it came to, you know, women. Like, he respect them, great, don't beat them, but there was, all I knew was treat women with respect, you know, be chivalrous, essentially call them ma'am, you know. But after then that college area and that oil and gas industry, your environment is who you are at that time. So a lot of strip clubs, a lot of things of that nature. So I never really had a lot of, like, a male role model who said, hey, this is what your woman should look like in your life. For me, it was, you know, pretty women getting laid, all those things and that most men have thrown at them. And it's so easy that, you know, the devil to attack you, put it right there. It's of that flesh, right? So easy to just do those things. So in the midst of all that, what led me to my faith was my wife. I married her.
Yeah.
And I tear up when I talk about it because she saved me. She really did. She saved me.
That's awesome.
Good, because he did it in the most crazy way, because I was coming back home from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, of all places. A hole in the wall of, like, the worst places to be, right? In the oil and gas industry. So And I'm flying home for my last day on that job because I'm doing this travel business full time. I'm like, I cut my losses. I'm going to go full time. And she was the stewardess. Well, flight attendant. Now they call them flight attendant on the plane that was going back to Denver. And, you know, she apparently saw me enough to want to get to know me and talk to me on the plane. And from that day forward, she, you know, we ended up going on a few dates, you know, for 3 months, 6 months, by 9 months, we were married.
Wow.
Like everything was just, you know, completely gone at that point, but she pretty much took me out of that environment. And I think God has a plan for all of us, right? I go through all these women and dating, and you go through all these examples of what a woman should be like in your life.
Yeah.
And God's like, I need you to go through all this pain, the suffering, the heartbreak too, so that you know what it is to deserve a woman like I'm going to give you.
Hmm.
That's a good way to look at it. I think we've all crossed that bridge somewhere in our lives, except for Sean. he's got two down and we don't know how many more to go, but, I can connect with you on that. Cause you know, we all go down this path and we think we're doing what is right, you know, and it's, you know, everybody wants that, right? Even this, Deion Sanders, you know, podcast with Ed Mylett, he talks about how he had everything, but he had nothing. A 15,000 square foot house, but he didn't have a home that he felt at home in. He had the cars, he had the women, but he didn't feel loved.
Exactly.
You know, but then you find that one person that was called to be with you and it changes your entire direction in your life. Cause it's somebody that cares about you that deeply and sees the good in you and wants to be part of your, you know, build a family with you. That says a lot. And so I love the fact that you shared that with us with a level of emotion.
Yeah, I didn't see you guys cheer up.
I try not to because I'm a softie, man. I'll be crying out loud if we get me going.
Fred cries at Wendy's commercials.
Point. What's that?
I said Fred cries during Wendy's commercials.
I mean, they. Can you blame me?
In all seriousness, Brad, I commend you for what you said because that was powerful, and I got goosebumps when you said that because, man, there was something in you that your wife saw. She recognized something in you that you didn't yet recognize in yourself. She saw potential. She saw maybe the hand of God on your life saying, that's the man. Maybe she was obedient and he said, you need to talk to that man. I have no idea. I've never even spoken to your wife. I've seen pictures and I've heard her in the background during our discussions, but that's powerful, bro. And I appreciate you sharing and the emotion that you shared with us and our listeners was genuine and real, but it shows and it's a testimony to you and your wife and the love that you guys have for each other. And I think that's super powerful. I know, Fred, you and Denise have, you know, an amazing story as well. You guys have been married, what, 23 years?
27.
Coming 27 up. Years.
Yeah, 27 years, so.
Make my 10 years seem like a, you know, stepping stone.
You know, but it is wild. Marriage is a tough game, and it's not easy. But you got to find somebody that cares about you enough to go through the ups and downs and stick to it for the right reasons. And, you know, I think it's a blessing. You know, nothing's ever easy, but we try to find the good in each other and build the version of our life that we want to do, you know, building it the way we want it and living it how we want it. We want to be good people. We want to be good citizens. We want to be good friends and love the shit out of each other. We're at the point where our kids are old enough now where they live with us, but they're out of the house quite a bit. So we're almost empty nesters, but thank God we care about each other because we have a blast even when they're gone. You know, we'll go out on Friday nights or Saturday night and do things with friends and hang out, kick back and talk. But
freedom.
So it seems like that when the kids are little, but now we miss them being around all the time because, you know, we have a bond with our kids that's second to none. Right. And, but, you know, we'll take it wherever we can get it. But we love spending time with the kids or without the kids. Either way, we're good. So that bond is there. So.
You know, Brad, do you – and I know Fred does this, but they go on date nights. They go on bike rides. They go to a bar or a restaurant. And one of the things that Fred and Denise are passionate about is live music. They're always going to concerts. They go to a concert in the park. Somebody's in town. They go to just a local, you know, spot around the corner of their house, and they go listen to good music. And – you date your wife every week, don't you, Brad?
Yep. We try. Obviously, there's, you know, things get in the way, but we do make precedent to actually set time aside for us, our bonding, our, you know, connecting and being, you know, having time to discuss and talk about our life, because life is so busy, you don't get time to discuss those things.
Right.
For this period of time, sometimes we don't get, you know, the weeks, couple weeks on end to go. You know, I'm human just like everyone else. We try to make that as important as possible in our lives. Yeah. Because life does get busy. It does.
Well, and you have three kids, yeah?
Yeah. Yep. Twin and boys, they just turned 7 and my daughter just turned 9. So they're getting a little older.
Yeah. They'll keep you busy though. Are they all playing sports?
Yeah, I think they have this kind of a background story of that. One of them is very, they're night and day different twins, you know.
Oh, really?
Very energetic and outgoing and athletic. And the other one is like, I'll build a house, build a block, put a puzzle together. You know, night and day difference. And you're like, come on, play sports. And the other one just doesn't listen to you because he's athletic. You know, he thinks he got it
out already. That's interesting, though. Usually it's, you know, they're rallying and competing with each other, you know, to be the better athlete or, but I mean, you know, kids, I think are born the way they're going to be born. Right. And so it's good that you respect that and let them be, you know, excel where they shine. So when we were listening to that, I don't mean to keep referring back to that Ed Milet podcast, but with Deion Sanders, but he was talking about his boys were 2 years apart. And he cheated at baseball, said they're a year apart so they could be at the same team because, heaven forbid, go to two different practices at times. But I'm like,
absolutely, I'd do the same thing.
Yeah, you'd be right in there if you'd be just fine. No bending the rules.
It looks like she's, you know, like 2 years older, 3 years older, and she's, because she's, you know, she's 9, but she's up to my armpit.
Oh, gee. So she's got your height? She's on her way?
Yeah, she's well over, you know, she's five foot one, and a 9 year old.
Yeah. Geez. Is she athletic? She's got to be dangerous at that height.
Yeah, she's getting there. She played, you know, she's playing basketball, this type of thing, which is super great. But, you know, kind of directing where she wants to go, basketball, volleyball. And the boys are the same thing. You know, one's in swimming, loves swimming. It doesn't like anything else because he can't even, you know, jump over his own shadow. He'll trip over it. So he does swimming. And the other one just doesn't know what he wants because he's good at everything. And so, but yeah, they're all going to be tall. Doctors, you kind of estimated them right around 6'6", 6'5", all three of them.
Oh, wow.
So, that's crazy.
Yeah, I'm like, great. Thanks, freak genetics. You know, my dad's, they're all huge. You know, they're all front. They're all like, what's the, you know, not Navajo, but my dad's Cherokee, but his side of the family, or they're like Vikings.
Norwegian.
Huge Norwegian guy, like 7'1", 400 pound, like, Woodstock men working in the lumber services. They're just giant men. Dad was a little bit shorter than that. His dad was like 6'5", 6'6", but his brothers were just massive, massive men.
Oh, wow.
Raised in Missouri. Just Woodstock type men.
real men.
Yeah, well, big, really men.
So you're in this MLM, you're crushing it, and then where'd your next avenue go? So break that down. You meet your wife, you guys get married, and then what's the next chapter for Brad? What's life looking like at this time?
Kind of working out of the oil industry, you know, kind of taking steps down, managing my, you know, my money and my income. Kind of, I'm doing this all on my own. I don't know anything about my assets or money. All I know is that I don't want to do what my dad did, because he made really good money, but lived paycheck to paycheck. Bought a bunch of nice cars and vehicles, always had the greatest, you know, good things after we left, things he had, which was great. And I was like, well, he's not going to really retire. I don't want that. You know, no freedom. He's always asking for money. It's the craziest thing.
Right.
But not really asking in a way that you have to give it to him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's a good negotiator, and I've helped you so much, you can help me type of thing. You know, like, your job is taking care of your dad, you know?
Yeah.
After, I've given for you what I gave up for you. And really, it's not the way it works. And that's not how I would respect his legacy if, you know, that was me. I'll work for my own. I'll keep my own type of thing. But anyway, so going back that way, I got into finance all because of a fluke. In 2012, 13, after I kind of stopped playing basketball, I was working in the oil and gas industry. I've done this for about a decade, up until like 15, 16. The oil market crashed in 2012, based on that whole market fluctuation. And then I took an explosive to the face in the oil and gas industry. I was doing wireline and pump down types things, and P&As, which is like taking out wells and basically just servicing them. They're no longer wells anymore. You're taking them out of the ground.
Yeah.
had a setting tool go off in my face from that set off an explosive. The team I was working with at the time was supposed to disarm it. They didn't disarm it. I went over to start taking off a firing head, which basically looks like a giant spark plug with 22,000 pounds of pressure behind it.
Oh, damn.
And so I went to take it off, and there's a fail safe on those. Thank goodness, because if it wasn't, that would have shot off like a missile and went through, killed somebody through a car or whatever. But
right.
It fired 22,000 pounds of pressure through a pinhole, like a side, top of a ballpoint pen. And it hit me in the right side of my face, like Jesus. Not even a foot away. And so basically, I mean, it happened so fast. All I remember hearing is a poof, and I was just out. So had I died, I wouldn't have known anyway. I wouldn't have felt anything, just,
Right.
But I had a blast shield on, safety PPE, which is crucial. That's why most people die, is they don't have those things on. They don't wear goggles, right. And glasses. So, thank God I did that. But I think it was kind of the faith side of things. I think it was a wake up call. I wouldn't say, oh God, he did this because he wanted me to wake up. It was more of like it was a situation that I chose to be in that he decided to use. Mm-hmm. To give me like, hey, you're meant for something different.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have left, honestly, if something like that had not happened and I had not had a kid. It made me really second guess what I was doing there and reevaluate my life situations and kind of course corrected me, like, oh, I already know this is going to happen. I'm going to use this. He's choosing to do this because, God, it's free will. God doesn't make choices. We do.
Right.
So I think it was a way for him to guide me, but it ended up raising this right side of my face under my shield. So I got like sandblasted burns on the right side of my face, gunk in the eye. I was kind of out for 3 or 4 days, just kind of recovering from that, from my face. And as men, you know how we are. We get hurt, but we live, right? And then what's our response? Oh, I made it. Not today, devil. Like, you ain't getting me today.
Right.
You ain't stop. Like, I'm tough. I'm fine. I'm okay. Yeah. Wife did not take it that way at all. She pretty much was like, you're done. We can't do this. If I lose you, what happens if you were gone? Like, I can't do this. You got to find a way out. Like, you're not doing this anymore. Go find a different job. And so I took lower paying jobs every year to kind of scale out of the industry, like I mentioned. And a buddy of mine was like, you got a family. You got to look into some life insurance. Like, be smart about this. It's not, life insurance isn't for like just the dead. It's for if you die and when you die, not if, when.
Yeah.
And he opened up this whole world of how money actually works to me. I sat down with him and I was just like blown away of like, this is how money works. Wait, you're telling me if I put this here and this works like this, I can do this? Like, how come no one's ever taught me this? He's like, there's not enough people teaching it. They don't want you to know. If they did, there wouldn't be a system for them to work off of anyway. And I was like, it just like ignited me. I don't know what it was, but it ignited me. So I feel like God was like, I'm going to use this to get this guy where I need him to be. And it just lit me on fire. I'm like, just what I could learn and what I had learned for myself that my dad didn't know, my family didn't know, or anyone around me didn't know how money was supposed to be used. So that's essentially how that transitioned short.
Yeah. I was going to say there's gotta be something that takes place to get you to wake up and be able to accept that gift that your friend give you, with a life threatening circumstance that, there's a reason they pay you a lot of money in the oil fields. I work in the PPE business so I've been in it for 25 years.
Yeah.
And so I know PPE is just a measure to, lessen the impact or, reduce the risk. But at the same time, you get paid handsomely because it's high risk, heavy labor. It's usually not something you can do forever unless you move into management, but it's high risk, high reward. And then they know they got the golden handcuffs on you.
Yep.
So like you said, if that incident wouldn't have happened, it wouldn't have slapped you hard enough to knock some sense into you to be willing to consider something else, So then the timing rolled into, there's the next door that opens for you, which is, we're looking forward to learning more about from you here, that journey.
Yeah.
You're telling this story and I'm thinking of Jonah, right? God tells Jonah, go to Nineveh. And he's like, no, I'm not going to Nineveh. And he ends up in the belly of a well. And then 3 days later, he gets out of the belly and he's like, all right, I'm going to Nineveh, it looks like. And I know that I've been a hard learner in my 50 years. I've touched the stove once, wasn't hot enough. I touched it twice. It was pretty damn hot. And the third time, I'm not looking to go back and touch the stove again. But it's, you know, there's something to be said about God's able to use extraordinary things that happen in our lives to make this, you know, radical change, if you will. And we talk about it a lot, Fred. Radical change requires radical change.
Yeah.
And this radical change that you're facing and that you experienced, it was, you know, I get that question a lot. You know, why does God allow, why did God do this? And well, it's not so much God did this, but it's, he allows things to happen in our life, but it's all for the greater good, right? Absolutely. And look at the direction your life is headed now, going from the being a roughneck, you're in the oil industry, and now you're exposed to this new concept of how money works, and the light bulb went off for Brad. And then what? You just dove deep in that industry?
Yeah, I started working part-time in a firm, and, you know, and to kind of go back to what you said, it's not, when something happens in people's life, they don't look at it like a good thing.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, you know, why me? Everything was going this direction. Why me? Why this? It's not,
sure.
It's not why me, it's for me.
Yeah.
Everything in life is if there's a challenge or something behind it, there is something greater on the other side of that challenge.
That's right.
Whatever it is, however many years you got to do it, how long you got to push from, there's something. If there are a lot of, where there's a lot of stress, there's a lot of growth. It's like diamonds, right? You probably heard this 1,000 times for every entrepreneur that ever talks, but diamonds are formed under a great, immense amount of pressure.
Yeah.
Like the most beautiful gem, sought after gem in the world is created out of pressure.
Yeah. And years and years of pressure.
Years.
Yeah.
I think so. Every entrepreneur in their journey, it's like, I got here because of all this pressure, all this difficulty, all this stuff I had to go through, all this people who paved the way. Look where it got them.
Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah, I took a lower paying job and I got out of the oil field going that way. And, you know, I managed over 150 wells getting out of that, you know, getting out of it, and, you know, 80 to 90 grand a year, which is still high income.
Right.
But then I started, you know, working from there. I started working with a firm part time to get in the finance industry, because I was like, how do I get in it? How do I learn? And this guy was like, you got to start here. And I was like, do I have to go to school? Because I don't want to go back. I don't want to go to school. There's nothing for me at school. Right. I was already a certified welder. I did massage therapy, right? I did all these things that required certificates that I could do as a trade to become, you know, make my own money, not live on someone else's time, their clock. But I was like, cool, just got to get a license and study, do all the things required to do that. And I transitioned. So I said, how much can you make? Because I make X amount of dollars. And if I'm going to do this, I have to be able to recoup double or triple what I was making,
right,
to make it even worth my time. Because I never made anything less than $45, $50 an hour.
Right.
Like that's hard for someone to say, hey, I'm going to take a pay cut from 250 a year to go to 70 grand.
Yeah.
You know, our expenses, luckily I didn't spend a whole lot of money on a lot of things. I lived pretty minimal. I didn't buy new cars. I didn't buy new trucks. Like most of the guys in the oil field, I lived pretty subpar, you know, but so I started working at a firm part-time, just selling life insurance, trying to figure out how to, you know, to use that as a key to help families grow and protect them from things that had happened to me or people that happened to other people. Who lost their families, you know, who've lost their income and didn't have life insurance. Now they're out there posting GoFundMe pages.
Sure.
Right. It's, so that's where I went from there, has gotten to the finance industry, working part-time on that, just with a small little private firm.
Nice. So are you doing self-help, like personal development in this time? Like, cause I know you're a big advocate of that. And the whole time you're doing this, were you doing this in college, or was this like something you started after college?
After college. I mean, college for me was just a place where I could, you know, try to go pro, get looked at, get good grades, and meet lots of girls.
Yeah.
That's, I mean,
that's the place.
No direction for it. You play on the basketball team, football team, or something, you're like, you're going to be around girls all the time. And you know, that's going back to that was like shooting fish in a barrel. So it was like easy for me.
Yeah.
It was a place where every guy who was an athlete could just be a man, essentially. Yeah.
So, but at the same time, so unfulfilling. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was, how do you, rewarding of the flesh, but also, but not for the mind. Like you're saying, like, I'm doing all these things and this is great, but it's temporary. It's like a temporary need for a permanent problem that we weren't solving. You were just, like a dog is only so mad for to eat, and if you keep feeding it just a little bit a day, it's not going to be mad anymore. It just knows it gets fed every day, once a day.
Yeah, right.
submissive.
That's good. That's good. So you join, you're doing personal development. You're in this firm. When was the next chapter where things just started blowing open for you? And not saying that, you know, you're not working hard or whatever, but the mm-hmm. next level, I guess, the next advancement, promotion, right. if you will.
So I have and my wife tells me this all the time, I have a very keen sense of when things are going south. And I don't know what it is, but I just, whenever a new opportunity arises and I have to question what I'm doing, I know it's for a reason. Mm-hmm. So even when that MLM company was in that, I was making decent money. I thought, you know, I'm going to go do this more insurance, you know, sell this company, do this more full time. I feel like with the changes that are happening with the company, and you know, they always have these conventions and they always talk up what's happening, need changes, and don't worry about this. The economy's doing this. And then, you know, something felt weird that year. So I ended up selling my whole downline, basically whole upline, up to my upline, and mm-hmm. getting out. So I basically just sold the business for a profit. Made, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars doing that, which was great. And then went into insurance full time. I was with that firm, and I transcended that firm into more of I would say network marketing type insurance, you know, Prime America, World Financial Group. So Ed Milette is actually where I met him through World Financial Group, because that's where he made his wealth, was yeah. his insurance company.
Didn't he sell it for like 500 or 700 million?
I mean, he's a partner. He was a partner in it for as long as I can remember. But he was a big part of building that whole firm up, just like Patrick, Ben, David. Most of these guys have started insurance. Ty Lopez started insurance. Like, all these guys are starting in insurance for a reason.
Right.
So I met him basically doing that in this company and made some pretty good success with that, you know, and I was working like locating services part-time, that, you know, doing that as well for a while on top of building the insurance agency. And that's when I got my promotion into that. And then I learned about certain type of financial strategies that people can use creatively, not like normal 401k IRA type things that most people hear about, you know, that all the generic W-2 employees have or do,
right.
but really to take money and use it in such a way, like most investors use real estate as debt, but not using their own money.
Yeah.
And I just got down this promotion, you know, to a senior marketing director of the company, which is a great area to be at, good money, but not great money. And in that time, the company was going through a transition. They got a new CEO, and it was that CEO the first 2 years of it. He came down and started speaking to all the main offices with all the big producers. And it triggered something in my mind where I was like, why would he come down to a very small team, but a high producing organization to tell us everything's going to be fine? Which in some cases, a lot of things would transition would be fine. But I felt that time like something's going to happen.
Yeah, your radar's going off.
Right. So I ended up just leaving. I'm going independent this time. So I start my own firm. So I'm recruiting my own agents, writing my own business, and I make more money. I like tripled my income the first year when I'm on my own. But in that time period, that 2 years that I was away, or a year and a half I was away, all the top earners in that company started leaving. Like I had gotten rid of the business. I got rid of my upline, whatever I got. I get just basically left. And that keen sense kind of went off again. Like, hey, it's time to move. Like something's going to happen. You need to get out when you can. And you've done what you could do here. Now it's time for you to really, I can use you in what, you know, what I've set you forth to do.
Right.
And that was my trigger that just went off. But yeah, even to today, like one of their main guys, he was making like $12.5 million a year running this organization.
Wow.
He just left and started his own brokerage.
That's a small sign.
Man, I was like, I have a unique ability just to know when to move.
Yeah, that comes to experience, right?
Yeah. And Ed Milette knew this too. He actually got back in the business not even 5 years ago with World Financial Group. And then he got back out.
Yeah.
And recently, I don't know if you saw his last podcast, but he was like on with his doctors saying, yeah. Hey, you need to scale back. You're done. Like you need to just.
Yeah. He's done with social media. He's cutting way yep. back. He's not traveling. He's not doing shows, nothing. Yep. He's got to get his health in order. Right.
But he's healthy, but he's not what he used to be.
Right.
Yeah.
You said something that was profound. And it was, being able to understand, or you had that keen sense of knowing when something was wrong. And it's not just knowing, but you actually knew, and then you still had to make that decision to move.
Right.
And I think even for myself, that's been a problem in my life, is I know something's off. The radar's going a certain direction, but guess what? I didn't move. And that's happened a lot in my life. And I've gotten better over the last several years. When I say several, 4 or 5 years, where it's like, okay, your intuition, that voice is speaking to you, whatever you want to call it. God is letting me know, hey, something's not right here. You're going to have to move. If not, you're going to be a casualty of this. And I think that's, you know, for our listeners, I think if you're listening and you've had that same experience in life, it's equally important to be able to just move. And it's never comfortable, right? It's always uncomfortable to do that thing that you don't want to do. But when you move, that's when the magic happens.
Yeah. It's true, too. I mean, even in most cases, like, I don't know if you guys know this, maybe I talked to you about this a couple of times, Sean, but there's times where it's a learning lesson when you don't. Like, I just, you know, hey, it's a testament to your character that I'm going to make you even more of what I have planned for you, even sooner.
Yeah.
And so when we don't move, he keeps at us. God is so persistent. He's chasing us always. He's always pursuing us. No matter how much we put him back, he's always going to find a way to where we're able to rely and build a relationship with him.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get too spiritual, but every aspect of our lives is God's in place, a part of what he has to do and what he has, you know, set for you to accomplish in the kingdom.
Yeah.
And whether that's not what we do, it's how we're doing life.
Yeah.
And who are we doing life with? And it's just a true testament of, you know, even when I invested in Bitcoin, like I got in because, this is back in 2012, 13, by the way, $1.70, whatever was at back then.
Yeah.
About 2,000 of them. And I sold because I thought, this is where devil plays tricks on you. I thought, like, hey, this isn't real. There's no way this is real, kind of thing. Sold them.
2,000 Bitcoin, 70,000.
It's like $142 million today.
Yeah.
Ouch.
So what's the lesson? Don't always listen to your bodily intuition, but listen to where you're being called.
How many times a day do you kick yourself for that?
I tell people I lost, like, you know, $100 million, and they're like, how? And I'm like, well, I didn't lose it. I lost the opportunity.
So, right.
I made money. Honestly, I made, because I sold it, all of them, when it went up about 75 cents. So I made like $30,000 or whatever it was. So I made out ahead, but it was like,
but it wasn't $140 million.
Oh, dude, that's the thing. Like, if I'd waited 4 years, it would have went up to, like, I think it was like 20,000, 25, 30,000 4 years later.
Yeah.
Right.
So it was like 52 million, I think, at that time. But I was like, today, it's, you know, what's about, 72 grand right now today?
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But lesson in that is saying, not knowing when the tuition is versus when God's calling you to do something.
That's right.
I was going to the gym the other day, or going to my Bible study, listen to this, and I never don't plan anything over my Bible study, my men's group. I go to my men's group every 6:30, every Thursday morning, and I like clockwork, I'm there. Nothing deters me from it. And for some reason that day I had my gym bag in the backseat of my car. I was going to go maybe afterwards, but I'm driving there. Just there's either a turn to get on the interstate and go, or I could go to the gym. And that day I was being told to go to the gym. And I've never, that didn't cross my mind. I just go straight to Bible study most of the time. Like, it was like, go. And I was right there. I'd go to Bible study or gym. And I went to the gym. And I didn't know what it was for. I was kicking myself in the butt. I was halfway down. I was like, oh, I should have just went. Like, you know, I never missed this. Why did I do that? I get there and there's a guy in the locker room who I made up talk to several times. And he's telling me about, hey, I got this going on. And so I was like, really? This is what I do. He's like, you do this? And I was like, yeah. He's like, well, I got to figure out all this because I'm getting ready to retire and I have all these problems and I have this coming on. I was like, dude, you met me at the right time. This is great. This is what I do. And it was that. I listened to God's calling on what he was using. I, like, he called me to do something. I was listening and I acted on it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because I just didn't want to go. I was being called. I was listening to the intuition that God was giving me.
Mm-hmm.
I can go deeper, but
no, that's good.
No, that's, yeah, that's, it's interesting. I always wonder on the, you know, you talked about growing up, you guys lived in, you know, in poverty and, yep. You know, as you grow and get older, you got to make decisions for yourself. But, we talk about listening to the voice and then, you know, I listen to the one that's like, you know, the overreacting, you know, you got to determine where the voice is speaking to you. Is that gut, is that feeling hitting you in your mind, in your heart or in your gut? And so, cause I've had a tendency, like, cause I, you know, I grew up poor. So I'm like, when every time something happens, I'm like, sell everything. And my wife's like, you always overreact. And I'm like, and she's probably right. Sometimes I just got to hold the line and, you know, but I'm like, shit, you know, the car spun out, so we're going to crash and die. That's my take on it. Cause that's how it was when I was growing up. And so, you know, and we've learned quite a bit, Sean and I, through our coaching groups that we've been into, the scarcity mindset. So it does take some time to be able to trust the voice and be a good steward of the voice that's speaking to you. And then being able to digest what message is coming and what the level of severity is, you know, cause you work hard your whole life and there's things that you've earned and you value and you want to keep. And then, you know, the longer you have them, things become sentimental in your family. And, you know, I didn't grow up with much, so I don't expect much. So I'm like, hey, I could live with a lot less than we have today. But my wife always, you know, she's always the voice of reason. She goes, I think you might be overreacting. You know, and I'm like, no, sell everything now. We're going. You know, no different than when I got back from the first Warrior Conference. I'm changing everything tonight, you know, and I was a crazy person. But so anyways, I always love hearing those kind of stories, especially when it has a positive outcome. You know, but I always worry too about shortchanging yourself because you had a knee-jerk reaction, like selling the Bitcoin, right?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, usually those investments are a long-term investment. And, you know, usually they say invest what you can afford to lose on those things. And if you would have put it in and just stuck to it, you know, you'd have been, you know, not on this podcast. You'd be on Ed Milet's podcast.
Let me ask this, Brad. We're coming up to about our hour coming here in a few minutes, but if you could give our listeners two or three key nuggets of where they should even start or where they should plan. Mm-hmm. And for our listeners, you guys can find him on Instagram, Brad Abbott_CEO. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Brad Abbott, ABBOTT_CEO. Or on Facebook, you can just look him up. But you can't miss him. He's 6'7", and he's a financial guy. But if you could give our listeners two or three, you know, key nuggets, or where should they start? What should they focus on? Something, drop some value on our listeners.
Yeah, you know, a lot of this is controversial. I'm not a Dave Ramsey fan at all. Like, I'm not even used to it.
Me neither.
Now, there's some things that, you know, I would say are good mindset qualities to have because he is an entrepreneur. He understands some certain things, but his strategies aren't made to benefit those who are made, you know, want the freedom. They're made for people who are just trying to just get by, the middle class people who are just, you know, making that switch between poverty and middle class. Stop the suffering, stop the bleeding a little bit, wrap with the Band-Aid type thing, but don't get out of it. He's a marketing genius. He's made his millions of dollars just marketing to the poor and middle class.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's different for everybody. Everyone's situation is different. It's not always debt related. Some like debt, some don't. Some invest. Had I invested, you know, if I sold the Bitcoin, who cares? Like, what if I took that $20,000-$30,000 and invested in the business now I'm worth hundreds of millions of dollars? What if I hadn't done that? You know, so we don't know whether our choices are going to affect us good nor bad. I would say just lead with a few things. If it's good, it doesn't hurt people, and it's better for everyone around you, it's a win-win, then those are the right decisions to make. And we're never always going to make. Not always going to make the right decisions. And this is one thing that my dad said that did stick with me. And if you're not always going to make the right decisions, then the ones you do make wrong, you have the opportunity and the ability to make it right.
Mm.
And he always ended like this. And God damn it, son, you better make the right decision.
that's good.
Yeah. But for two key nuggets, kind of wrap it up. Always life insurance for things you should get, and understand life insurance is not just for death. It's for using it while you're alive. And Sean, you know this because I have strategies wrapped up in what we do.
Yeah.
It's the only place you can put money where it can't be touched, taken from you, garnished. It's a safe haven. The government can't touch you. Your divorcees can't touch. No one can touch that money that's in there.
Yeah.
To get used as creatively as you can, to design to help you fund whatever it is your aspirations are in life. That is one of the biggest keys to the planning world is life insurance. And most people don't know that. And it's a huge key to leaving behind a legacy.
Yeah.
If done the right way. Yeah. So always watch your pennies and the dollars will take care of themselves. So always take your money and keep your money. Keep as much as you can. So that's number one. Watch your money because the government's not going to do it for you. Mm-hmm. Right. Compound your money as best you can. So, and then take care of your family. And have faith, you know, in God that's going to, he's going to make the right decisions for you and protect you and lead you the right way. But as long as it's your money, your money's your money.
Yeah.
What's that J.G. Wentworth commercial? It's your money and you need it now.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
You try to do that with your money. So I would say if you have a financial planner, which I don't say those are the best guys to work with because they usually kind of veer away from life insurance strategies in general, but don't look at it as life insurance strategies. Look at it as like a freedom strategy. It's something that you get to set your family free with. I don't know any other place that you can take $1 and use it twice and never pay taxes on it.
That's right. It is tax-free, by the way.
Yeah, good tax point. Tax-free
the rest of your life, no matter how many times you use it. Now, there are some, you know, how do you use them and strategize them are completely different to how each person uses them. You got to customize these things. That's why they get such a bad rap.
Yeah.
It's because no one designs them or customizes them to what that person needs it for. If you just want a lot of life insurance, then go get a bunch of term. That's what term insurance is for. It's renting a large amount of money for the cheapest cost. Now, Dave Ramsey pounds that into your head. Go get term. Yeah. Buy term and invest the difference. Great. Yeah. No one knows how to invest the difference. And all the managers out there who are taking all this money for a percentage.
Right. They're looking to move your money.
Yeah, you can lose your money, but they're still getting 1% no matter what you do.
That's right.
So there's not a lot of ethical people in the finance world. So I'm against certain CPAs who don't believe in those strategies to help set their clients free. I don't believe in managed money as much. There are great qualities to it, but for the right person, specific timing. And I just feel like people are misled when it comes down to money, where to put it and what to do with it at a very basic level.
I appreciate you sharing that. And, you know, as I mentioned before, I have my strategies with Brad. He sat down with me. We went over a couple different times we've done it. You know, what do you want? And what I want is to leave my girls a legacy. I'm going to make mine. I'm going to get mine. But I want to make sure my girls are taken care of. And Brad helped me set that up. And, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to get more life insurance here in the next year or two. It's just a good strategy for my girls. It's not for me. Yeah. It's for my girls and their future. Right. So, it's a good strategy. You said something, I'm going to wrap this up, but you said something about strategy. And Fred, you and I were talking about this the other day. The right strategy at the wrong time is still the wrong strategy.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. It's profound. And timing plays a huge role. So, Brad, I appreciate you coming on, man. Fred, do you have anything else?
Yeah, I appreciate you likewise, Brad. I think, I kind of like this conversation we're having towards the end of the show. And I think it would warrant having you back on and maybe share with our listeners. Cause I think this is a big gray area for most people. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty terrifying because I mean, just like anything that gets abused, there's people that abuse the financial system to get they want to get out of it.
Right.
Churches, congregations have, you know, led with despair and getting what they want to get out of it, you know. But when we bring people on that have a true essence and a commitment, a level of authenticity that they want to share, you know, I think that this would be a fantastic show to tee up some key points on what people, where they could start, kind of like what you said here at the end, but maybe we can dive a little deeper into that because so many people, I know myself, I've had very good seasons in my life earning potential. I've had some not so good seasons, but when you can capitalize at an early age on some of the good seasons and know what to do with your money so that you can leverage it, you know, obviously the rich learn how to leverage their money, but even when you're sitting with a CPA, you don't know the questions to ask. So unless you just happen to get lucky, find the right CPA and creates a good financial, you know, or gives you some guidance to connect you either with the right people, the right team.
Right.
So anyways, in closing, you know, I'd love to invite you back to the show. It's been great getting to know you. And I think, you know, our listeners would have a tremendous advantage if we could jump on again here in the near future. And you know, just share some of those things, because it is too grave an area. People are afraid and there's too many people taking advantage. So, you know, let's, after we get off this call, we'll coordinate something with Sean here and get you back on, and we'll do one that's specifically based around that and some of the lessons you've learned along the way, some of the insight, and we'll take it from there. So, but we love having you on the show. We appreciate it.
Yeah, it was good. Thank you, Brad. And thank you for being vulnerable and sharing about your wife, your family, your history, your dad, your family. I know it's not easy, but just that story, that message, if it helps one person, it's always worth it, right? And that's what it's all about. So to our listeners, thank you guys so much for tuning in to the Stanford podcast. If you guys found value and you like the show, please share it. Tell people about what we got going on over here, because we're trying to make that change one person at a time. And it does start with you, our listeners. So hope you guys have a blessed afternoon, evening, morning, whatever time of the day you're listening to us. Keep tuning in. Fred, it's always good to see your smiling face, my bro. And I like that hat.
Sure.
Wear a hat next time, Sean.
I'm going to have to get one of those fancy hats, Fred.
Sounds good. I appreciate it. So, yeah, thank you guys for listening to the show, and we'll catch you next week.
Take care.